Okay, Steve Colburn, if you haven't heard his name, was the partner along with Roger Lear. And Roger Lear was known for doing the alien implants. And there's a movie, Patient 17, that I think, if you have not seen it, will fill you in on all the details here, because we might be talking about stuff that is a reference from that film or something else. But I wanted to talk with Steve when I saw that he was involved with this, because... and recently I talked with Terry Lovelace, who gave me the x-ray picture of his implant, because this isn't just a one-time thing. That patient 17 indicates there were other patients and other people who've had this experience. And so I think the more we talk about what happens with this and the background and all that, that gives us, I think, a little ammo to know that these things are happening. We may or may not be able to prove them, but the fact that somebody has experienced them gives us a clue that we do need to do more research. So, Steve, I'm really glad that you're talking about this, and I haven't given your background. Chemist, chief material scientist, and you've been doing this for 20-some years, and you also have your own company, and I don't know what carbon nanotubes are. Okay, so, so Steve... Could you?
Yeah, that's been my main focus of research for the past few years. Is that carbon nanotubes are the world's strongest known material, and they have very unique electrical properties, and they're cutting edge of material science and civilian science right now. They're basically small tubes of hexagonally arrayed carbon atoms. That's like a sheet of graphite. That rolled up into a tube, and there's various diameters and chiralities, the chirality, the exact angle of rolling of the tube determines the electrical properties. And there's sort of metallic ones that conduct almost like a semiconductor or superconductor, and they're semiconducting tubes, and they're all extremely strong, much more so than metals. In fact, they're trying to reinforce common structural metals with carbon nanotubes to make ultra-strong materials, and we've had some success along those lines. It turns out that carbon nanotubes are an important component of the alien implants as well.
That's what I wanted to get...
carbon nanotube electronics. Good.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. So how does that relate to the alien implants?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a synchronicity that I was, me being a carbon nanotube researcher, I was called in to work with Dr. Lear, and it turned out that carbon nanotubes are found in all of these implants and probably are essential to their function. Some of them are highly strong and are reinforced by the carbon nanotube. Other ones have apparently carbon nanotube electronic structures in them. And we're working on those things in civilian science, but here on Earth, but apparently old technology to them.
You were there when the film Alien Implant was, I'm sorry, Patient 17.
Patient 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there.
Okay. And what did you, I mean, were you surprised at the procedure, or is this something that you were familiar with? I don't know how long you were.
Oh, I'm very familiar with it. I've gone through it. That was the third time I'd gone through it. The first time I'd gone through it was as a patient. I was patient 15. I met Dr. Lear after an alien abduction experience where they put an implant in my toe, and went to see him. He worked only a few blocks from where I used to work in Camarillo, California. He gave me a prescription to get an x-ray, and then something showed up, and he expressed interest in taking it out, so we set up a surgery, and Jaime Masson paid for that one. And he didn't have any place to analyze it, so once it was taken out, so he gave me a piece of the implant, and I analyzed it with a lot of the equipment I had at work, which included some electron microscope and Raman spectroscopy and a number of other high-tech analysis techniques, and I wrote a paper on the results. I don't know if I sent you a copy, but I'll send you a copy.
Okay. But my question then: so some people say if they know there's something in there, they will try and touch it, and it will move, and they feel like a pulse or a vibration, something around it, which makes it uncomfortable. Did you notice that with this? With your implant?
I didn't notice any movement or pulsation, but I did have I first noticed after the aliens came that there were two puncture wounds in the bottom part of my toe, and those fluoresced green, bright green under ultraviolet light. And the puncture wounds healed very quickly within hours. And I started getting a stinging sensation in the toe that got more and more intense and turned into an electric shock type sensation, especially whenever I put any weight on that toe. And about 4 days into it, it was really, really intense, right? I already walked. Every time I put any kind of slight weight on that toe, it would send a shock up my leg that felt like I was being shocked by an electric outlet or something.
Wow.
And then it decreased from there, and about a month later, it was pretty much gone unless I put a lot of weight on the toe. But I think that was the nerve cells growing into the device, and that there's nerve cells that connect these devices to the nervous system that grow in. There's probably some chemical cues on the surface of the implant that cause the nerve cells to grow. And I'm one of the few people that knows exactly when my implant was put in and knows what happens when it connects.
Okay, and that's what I also wanted to ask about, because since we talked before we were recording here, but you were saying that you were fully awake and aware when this was going on, and there was no way of saying, I'm not interested.
Oh, you mean during the abduction?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't remember anything consciously at first, but I just knew that it'd been there during the night, and then I had two more implants. I didn't know that. Sure, I knew anything, but I got regressed over the incident and remember what happened. That was an interesting experience, at least.
Okay, wait. Yeah, okay. That's like a tease. Okay, you can't say it was interesting. So what happened? Is this somebody that we know as a regression therapist?
They came in. First of all, I stayed in the house by myself that night because my wife was staying at her mother's, because we just had our daughter, and her mother was helping take care of her. So I went to the house to take care of a few things and got tired and decided to spend the night. And I noticed these huge raccoons in the backyard, one of which weighed like close to 100 pounds. I never even knew they got that big. It was very strange, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed semi-tame, so I gave them some cat food and watched them for a while, and then went in and went to bed. And then I woke up in the morning with this weird stinging pain in my toe, and this pain like it was bruised on the side of my head. And I realized I had two more implants. And I went to Dr. Lear, and we went through the thing with the x-ray and found out there was something there. And then he referred me to Yvonne Smith for regressive hypnosis. And I remembered what happened when I had the regression. And it turned out that they came in and they sent a couple beings into my bedroom late that night and told me, said, come with us, and they had a UFO hovering about rooftop level, a small one about 40 feet diameter. They took us up into, I walked out in the backyard, they took us up into the craft with a tractor beam, in the picture they've always got a tractor beam in the center of the UFO that comes down and picks things up, and that's how they do it. It's a gravity beam. They have an anti-gravity drive, and they just somehow shape the effect into a beam or can. The center of the craft was an airlock, and they had spacesuits in there for aliens and humans. There were four doors leading to a corridor that went around the perimeter, and I saw a pilot station with a pilot and a co-pilot and screens. And one of the ones that came to get me led me to a table and told me to lie down, and they waited a long time for orders before finally putting the implant in.
Back after a short break. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest is Steve Colburn, talking about the alien implant.
They have a long instrument that's like a piece of stainless steel tubing with a handle on it. It it's got a fiber optic inside and a needle, and the device automatically inserts the implant and then activates it with ultraviolet light. And they put something else on the side of my head above my my ear with the same or similar instrument, and then returned me to my bed the same way they took me.
That almost sounds like a microchip type implant, the way that we do it here with animals.
Right. It was one of my toe was a cylindrical device about 3.5 to 4 millimeters long and about a millimeter, or slightly over a millimeter in diameter, and had a ceramic outer layer, probably with enzymatic cues that allow the nerve cells to grow in, and a gray tough membrane to form from the blood plasma that goes over it, and it had carbon nanotube ropes, for lack of a better term, about 10 microns in diameter coming out of it. That were probably the main connections to the device. Those seemed to connect to the membrane, and the membrane connected to the nerve cells that grew into it. And a colleague of ours, Dr. Kuntz, a physicist, speculated that, that the device was probably powered by zero-point energy. The device had a magnetic field of about 10 milligauss, and so the magnetic field, somehow connected with photon and phonon resonances inside the metal, and allowed zero-point energy to be turned into real energy. And I'm not too up on the theory he was using, but he seemed pretty convinced of it.
Okay, so this is far beyond anything that we're actively dealing with.
Yeah, in my opinion, it's far beyond our civilian science. And I know it's far beyond our civilian science. And in my opinion, it's beyond what the Black Project military can do as well. It seems to me to be at least 100 years beyond our technology. But apparently, it's old technology to them and the aliens. These were typical greys, by the way, that took me to the craft.
Okay. Now, I've had people who experiencers say there are sometimes multiple presences, and they may look humanoid, they may look reptilian, they may look grays. Was it a combo, or was you just saw grays?
On this particular trip, I just saw grays, but I've seen under regressions, I remember, and other conscious memories for that matter, I've seen hybrids, other abductees, different types of grays, tan grays, tall whites, Arcturians, and there's definitely different types of beings that are involved with this.
Okay, now, has this been a lifelong thing for you? Do you have memories going back to childhood?
Yeah, that was one of the first things I realized when we got regressed, that this was from day one, practically. I wasn't scared or anything. I knew that I'd done this hundreds of times.
Was this also part of your family experience, or do you know?
Yeah. My family's involved.
Okay.
It's a lineage thing. Dr. Lear, another researcher, has pointed that out, that it's definitely a lineage thing. It's not random. They have their roots in certain bloodlines of humanity.
Do you have any idea of the purpose?
The main purpose is to create hybrids, crossbreed between themselves and us. And another purpose is to genetically modify the human race, and to collect DNA from us and from other animal life on the planet. I think they do a lot of mining down here, mine elements that are rare other places, like gold and cobalt being two of them. They mine the moon quite a bit and use the moon to observe Earth. The moon's a large alien base. That's why we never went back. They told us they didn't want us there.
Okay, when Ingo Swann, when they wrote the book, or he wrote the book Penetration, he deals with some of this, where he did a remote view session for somebody, and they didn't give him any background, just said, "What do you see?" And he said at some point he saw some kind of activity going on, and there were some humanoids there. And as he was looking and trying to get more information, focusing a little more intently, and this is in his out-of-body psychic mode, remote viewing, two of them actually turned and looked at him and started gesturing in his direction. And that shocked him because they were aware of his presence at that time. But
yeah,
that's,
yeah. I certainly wouldn't, remote view them if I were a remote viewer. I mean, they have countermeasures to use remote viewers. But yeah, I read the book, and I think that what he said in the book is pretty accurate. I remember being on the moon a couple times on these experiences, and his material corresponded quite well to what I remembered.
I'm glad to hear that, because I do think that he was on to a lot, and he gives us not a whole lot of credit for being up to snuff on this, that we really have a lot of room to learn and expand and really do some more homework when it comes to things like telepathy and being aware of the other entities that are in our space, not just ETs, but, you know, elementals and other beings that we share this planet with. And for most Western science, if it isn't visible and visual, then it doesn't exist. And that isn't the case.
Yeah, there are beings that are pure energy too, call them angels or whatever, but the ETs are definitely aware of them, and they have a different mission than the ETs. I'm not sure exactly what it is offhand, but ETs talk about them sometimes.
Now, so this is on your webpage. You have pictures. When you posted these, there's an alien implant removed that's kind of a gold, honey color. Is that, where are these from?
The one I think you're talking about was from the one from my toe. It's a piece of the one from my toe.
Okay.
And I'll send you the paper I wrote. I've got lots of pictures and micrographs of the implants in there.
Well,
mine broke into 12 pieces on removal. It was brittle, and which was kind of a good thing to give us a good view of the interior. Patient 16's implant that came out of his wrist was made of an ultra strong iron carbon nanotube composite that was the most strongest stuff I've ever seen or even imagined, practically. Diamond tools wouldn't cut it. It scared the hell out of the machine shop operator that Roger took it to. And we finally had to cut it in half with a high-energy laser in order to get a view of the inside.
Wow.
So they're all different, but they all contain carbon nanotubes.
Okay. All right. And if you're listening, we're talking about the alien implants. This is patient 17 that I've been referring to. Roger Lear, deceased. Dr. Roger Lear was the person who was being followed, shadowed in this film. And I'm talking with Steve Colburn, and he's the partner who also was patient 15, which you don't say in the movie, but at the end of the movie, there's this little cliffhanger where all of a sudden you have this little implant, and I think Jeremy really wanted to get it from you, and then it was left that you still had it. So you still have that little piece of technology that was referred to in patient 17.
Like I said, I mean, I know what happens when you just turn things over to people, especially people that are working with government scientists and such. They'll usually just take the material and test it themselves and get the data for themselves, and then confiscate the sample and say that it was nothing, you know, but just an ordinary piece of material of some kind or another, and give you a phony lab report, kind of brush you off, and I'm not going to play that game.
Wendy's Coffee House, back in a few. KCMO Talk Radio. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Again, my guest, Steve Colburn. And we're referring to the movie Patient 17.
This nanoman that Jeremy was working with, I know nothing about the guy. And I told Jeremy that more recently that if he wants to have some more testing done, I would be open to that as long as I can choose the lab that's going to do it and or company to sample every step of the way.
Yeah. Hey, that just makes sense.
I even agreed to let Man-O-Man do a test as long as I could go physically to his lab and see what he was doing with the sample, and that was not acceptable, so I said no.
Okay. Yeah, I would have a problem with that too, especially since if it's the only thing you have and this is your one opportunity to prove that it's legit or real or at least get some kind of corroboration that what you have is an anomaly, you're not going to hand it over to somebody else and say, here. Take it and trust that it'll be returned in its entirety intact.
Yeah, especially since I know from my past experience and other people's past experience that the government will just snap these things up and take them from you if they get half the chance. So they don't want these kind of results coming out in public. I mean, I guess they've relaxed the rules a little bit compared to what they were doing before, but. Still, they stick around on people getting accurate results of these kind into the public domain.
Okay, well, another question, since this is coming up, the recent all the videos that are being released now, and now the government, the Pentagon saying, yes, these are true bona fide UFOs. But a year and a half ago, 2017, I think, when they first wrote the article that was in the New York Times and saying that they had acquired these videos and then the corroboration came from the pilots. Now they're finally saying, okay, we're in the middle of a pandemic. And all of a sudden this little headline filters out that says, yes, we're giving this credence and we are signing off on it saying these are legit UFOs. Now, just because they say legit UFOs doesn't mean that there's an agreement on the point of origin for them. UFOs just means
right.
Unidentified, and,
right.
And
they're just admitting to UFOs. They're not admitting to aliens. The dynamite, and the reason in my opinion they're keeping this so secret is because of the alien abduction phenomenon. And it's one thing to say that there's aliens safely cruising around our stratosphere or in orbit or whatever. It's another thing to say that they land and take people out of their houses and cars in the middle of the night and do experiments on them, and that they're so powerful that I think the government can use it and stop them, and they come and go as they please. That could damn well sure cause panic.
Well, and there was also stuff about infiltration in UFO groups, people who were experiencers then being either tailed, just in some way, somebody who would be shadowing them or stalking them, trying to find out what the connection was, and if they were legit for one thing, but harassment in some form because there was a curiosity there, and that's the only way they could get information. And this is all just from the talk, the scuttlebutt from experiencers saying that mm-hmm. they felt infringed upon and that they were being stalked and harassed by government sources. Now, could they prove that?
Yeah, they try to shut experiencers up a lot of times. They bug their phones. Black Project agencies often re-abduct them to interrogate them and find out what the interrogate them and or test them to find out what the aliens are up to. There's a lot of harassment besides from the aliens if you're an experiencer.
Less like counter harassment. You've already gone through the whole routine with the aliens, and then the government comes in and says, "Okay, let's take two. What's real?"
They're I think they're scared to death of experiencers on some level because they're afraid that the aliens could potentially push a button somewhere and turn us all into super soldiers or something. Maybe there's even some truth to that.
Well, that's what the CIA program was all about when they were trying to figure out. And this, I've interviewed a couple of guys about their experience with this at Princeton when they were volunteering for the CIA research project, which then, after years of trauma, realizing what actually had been done. And just that was, I think, a program that we were trying to weaponize in some way, shape, or form, super soldiers, and that's to that same extent. And I think Russia was also on the same plane. And so there was a competition with that, seeing, you know, what could be done with a human mind, and how could you make them forget something that they had been programmed to do. And to a great extent, some of that was very successful. And these two guys had the trauma to back that up. But my question for you is, with all of the stuff you've gone through, do you have a telepathic connection? Because that's what a lot of this is about, is this telepathic presence that there's no doubt when they are in your space.
Yeah, I have reason to believe that I'm telepathically connected to them. They put a brain implant in long-term abductees, and that connects to the alien hive mind. I feel like I'm being watched constantly, and some of the things that have happened have indicated to me that they know what's happening to me 24/7. They're experts at mind control. They're like superb at mind control. They're natural telepaths. They have technology that amplifies those abilities. They can send thoughts and receive thoughts and download information into you or upload information from your brain to themselves, and implant suggestions that are hard to ignore because the subject thinks it's their idea. It's a very powerful ability and technology they've got going in that respect. And I think the CIA and other government agencies down here have, for the most part, been copying them and their abilities.
Okay, but ours is always, the purpose is to weaponize. It isn't to expand or evolve the human. Or am I jumping to the wrong conclusion?
No. They want to weaponize everything. I mean, that's part of the problem with governments and humans in general, is that they treat every kind of new technology or new phenomenon as like a 10-year-old boy that's found his father's gun. They want to
practice,
weaponize it, and advance their power base and everything with it, rather than just be positive with it.
From what I have experienced myself, the contact, it seems to mirror the type of person. So if you are somebody who is going to be aggressive and in some way, shape, or form bombastic, antagonistic, then that will be the experience that you receive from those who are interacting with you. Whereas if you're more, and I don't want to say complacent, but maybe respectful, and in some way, shape, or form, willing to do a little give and take, that you attract a different type of entity. I don't know if that's legit. I know that there are multiple players in this, and so it depends, I think, on what species or what entity type that you're dealing with. When I had my own,
I know about different entities, but the short grays do most of the abductions, and they remind me of a high tech foreign military. Mm-hmm. And you'll definitely get better treatment by cooperating.
Yeah. Yeah. That part of it, I know in terms of reading reports and having my own interaction, that there is definitely a difference in the temperament of the contact, because there are some, it's like they're horrific. And you think, why? Well, you know, I think people are traumatized for life because of the initial encounters when they're young and have no way and nowhere to go with it, no way to respond, and then don't find any kind of a group that can help them deal with this until later on. So that trauma is still there.
Yeah.
When you had your regression, did that change things for you?
Yeah, it made things a little bit easier to deal with. I knew for sure it was happening. And got enough information from several regressions to, you know, paint like a bare bones picture of what was going on and what I was doing with the aliens. That definitely made it easier than just not knowing anything about what was happening on this aspect of my life. I'm one of the more well-adjusted ones. I mean, I feel bad for people. That there's a lot of people out there that they may even be the majority of frequent flyer abductees that have had a lot of contact, that have been driven crazy by their experiences.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's the one that Terry Lovelace, he was abducted with another a friend of who happened to be a good friend. What happened was he said that the military split them up after this encounter, and that didn't help his friend because then his friend had no support system, and the friend actually, when he did die, Terry had sent somebody out to try and track him down. I don't remember if he's FBI, but he was somebody with a background who could do some research, and he told him, well, yeah, he's dead. Then he found out that he hadn't died. They just kept the information from him. So he never was able to reconnect later in life and, you know, and just kind of, you know, compare stories. And the behavior, once they split them, he said his friend just kind of fell apart. And that was, I believe, part of the trauma was that he had nowhere to go for support. And Terry did. Okay, another question coming up, but I don't have time. We'll have to do it in the next break, about a doctor who was, many doctors who are performing this kind of operation. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest is Steve Colburn. It's a fascinating film, Patient 17, and it's available now. You can check it out and find out more about what was going on. And again, Steve was patient 15, so he's got firsthand account of this, but he was also a partner with Roger Lear, Dr. Roger Lear. The question I have for you then, is there a doctor who still, are you familiar with somebody? If somebody believes they have some kind of an implant like this, are you familiar with anybody who's taken on the work that Roger Lear was doing?
There's nobody currently doing removals, to my knowledge, but I scan people for the presence of implants and recent alien contact, and if I find something, they can always go to the doctor and get an X-ray to see if something comes up. And Daryl Sims also is doing similar work in Texas, from what I understand. I've been trying to get a hold of a surgeon that'll do removals, but I've not been successful thus far. But I think that at some point in the future, we'll probably resume doing the removals side. But I think some doctor somewhere would probably be interested in, if anybody's listening that's a physician or a surgeon, and you're interested in. And doing removals, please give me a call. My number is 805-625-2549.
Okay. And your website, alienevidence.webs.com?
Yeah, my website's alienevidence.webs.com.
Okay. Okay. Well, and see, part of this is that when we're in the dark and each person is isolated and keeping all this to themselves, then there is a sense of there's vulnerability, for one thing, and especially if they shame you or try and make fun of you into staying quiet, then we lose a whole lot because we lose the little idiosyncrasies that make each of these encounters a little more identifiable. And not only that, when you hear somebody say, well, the barometric pressure shifted, the air, and for me, it was like the air got crisp and clean, like I was standing on top of a mountain. I didn't have, and somebody would say it was like orgone, or I don't know, there's some kind of a smell. I don't recognize that. My thing was that it was crisp, clean, and the senses were heightened, where I could smell things, I could hear things, everything like was superpower with the presence of these other entities. And so I knew that it wasn't me. And I also had the telepathy on various forms. One was actually audible, where it was a sound that I could hear, and the other was internal, where it was just all, you know, just right there in your head. And there's a difference between that and you know,
90% of telepathy is non-verbal, but sometimes they do verbal telepathy as well. There's being there that can speak English and other human, or think in English and other human languages.
Yeah. So some of this is, you know, if you can't compare notes with other experiencers, you lose a lot of the intelligence that comes with this, with us being able to piece together the commonalities and to say, you know, was this a biology where somebody was in a physical form or a non-corporeal? and or, you know, a completely different entity. And like when you're saying that the Greys were more robotic and a militaristic because they have a certain function they're supposed to perform, and that's pretty much what they're interested in beyond anything else. There's nothing there. There's just so much going on right now with people talking about it. The 50s, they had the big contactees movements, and they all had a different, you know, a different story, but a similar parallel of we need to be paying attention to our planet. And here we are still at that same point, paying attention to the planet.
The contactee movement, I think, was in contact with different ETs than the ones that are doing the abductions now.
They didn't, They didn't have that negative, that same negative parallel.
Yeah, that may have been Pleiadians or Nordics or something. I mean, I'm not sure. There's not as much evidence for the existence of those two groups as there is for the Greys, but assuming they do exist, and then those are probably the beings they had contact with.
Well, the pictures are all different, and there are some that there are some artists that there was one in I believe he was in Spain. I've posted a few of these where the only thing that they have is their art to be able to say, this is what I experienced. And so they've gone to great lengths to create, one had sculptures of the beings that he encountered, that, and they have kind of an alien, more of a lizard type skin, very unique and distinct looking with clothing. And it changed his life, because then he's creating all these sculptures trying to say, this is real, this is what I experienced. And then there was another guy, again, another artist, who had the same kind of experience and drew spaceships of various kinds and all sorts of tech, because that was his experience. And so a lot of this just is under the radar, where people keep saying, they keep joking, and, oh, this is just all fiction. Well, okay. It may be fiction to you.
After all these, if there were one or two reports, I wouldn't even entertain this. I would say, yeah, it's fiction. But there's various things you can look at. What about the high level of classification all this has? I mean, why would the government classify it if there weren't anything to it?
Yeah.
And with thousands of people talking about meeting Greys or reptilians or Pleiadians or whatever, that's evidence of something. I mean, all the stories are very similar. There's physical evidence that's left behind, too. It's largely ignored.
Yes.
The implants, the alien fluorescent dyes that are left behind on people's bodies, landing traces of UFOs, traces of radioactivity, anomalous magnetic fields that have magnetized things that don't normally magnetize. All it's been pretty much swept under the rug.
There's actually an experience. This is Delphos, Kansas, where a vessel landed, and they went out to check it, and there are spots on the ground where there are imprints. And then I believe the woman either touched her leg or part of her body, and it immediately went numb. I believe that was from the radiation, but that never went away.
There's UFOs give off. If you ever see one up close, you want to keep your distance. They give off a lot of X-rays and microwaves. Some of the microwave energy is a special type called scalar energy that absorbs into materials. And that could be hazardous in the vicinity of one that landed and took off. I had an experience one time in my backyard where this area in the yard where I remembered under regression, the UFO had been hovering for a long period of time. On the 4th of July, we set off a firework there, and the ground caught on fire, and it wouldn't, and was burning like 3 feet underground and real hot. And there wasn't enough organic material in the soil that any even remotely support that kind of combustion. It was very difficult to put out. That's a phenomenon that has been inadequately reported in areas where UFOs have been known to frequent. John Hutchison, an inventor that's been doing experiments with radio energy, told me one time that he'd actually seen concrete catch on fire after being exposed to this type of energy.
I want to give out your information one more time. You said if there's a doctor who's working with this, who are interested in working with that, to call you. You want to give your number and your website, just because that'll be helpful.
My number is, my name is Steve Colburn, and my number is very code 805-625-2549. Leave a message if I don't pick up, and My website address is www.alienevidenceinc.webs.com.
Okay, if you're interested in some of the paranormal aspects of this ET contact, alien contact, then check out the longer interview. And it's on the website, Wendy's Coffee House, in the archives, the podcast archives, Wendy's Coffee House on Audioboom. Till next time, stay curious.